this is the Angry GM, and welcome to the final proofread aloud of 2023. Nope. The final proofread aloud of 2022. I'm already giving up on next year, actually, I guess. So that doesn't bode well. But anyway, we're going to do a proofread aloud today. The article, which I'm about to proofread aloud right now, I'm not even re-recording an introduction. You're stuck with this intro right now. The article is entitled, Why Run Games Anyway? An Angry New Year Story. And I don't know why I called it that, because the story part is 1,000 words at the end of the 4,500 word article. That's not part of the article, by the way. That's me clarifying. That's just me being chatty right now as I try to find my place. And then actually also as I regret not using the restroom before I sat down to start recording, and I've already drank my entire cup of coffee. So I'm going to pause the recording and mute myself on Discord, and I'll be right back in a moment. And this is also something that I probably shouldn't have said into the recording, but this is what you get. Happy New Year. Okay, this was just a day for poor planning, but considering I also started late. But I am back now, and I am ready to begin the proofread. So let's begin proofreading. Why Run Games Holy crap. All right, I don't have very much coffee left, so I'm going to have to ration it. Why Run Games Anyway? An Angry New Year Story. I don't want to end the year on a sour note, but I'm sure trying my damnedest to do just that. The way my little best and worst thing ended really harshed my buzz, if you know what I mean. And if you do know what I mean, I missed the word know. The way my little best and worst of D&D, I missed a bunch of words here, and that should be a link. Okay, hold on, I gotta fix this whole thing. This is a friggin' disaster. None of you are coming back on, this is the end, I'm done. Yeah, best and worst of D&D, 3.5. Yeah, okay, there we go. All right, let me try that again. I don't wanna end the year on a sour note, but I'm sure trying my damnedest to do just that. The way my little best and worst of D&D thing ended really harshed my buzz, if you know what I mean. And if you do know what I mean, please tell me. I have no idea what that phrase means. It's easy to be down right now. I mean, I just wrote 10,000 words that ended with me realizing that D&D 5e and I don't like each other very much, but we have to keep working together. That's assuming WotC's corporate stooges are going to let anyone keep working with D&D. Speaking of things dragging gaming down right now, D-Box 1, am I right? You've got the suits running their mouths about monetization and post-sale revenue and licensing requirements that are all the equivalent of the Dole Company charging kids lemonade stands a royalty fee for using their lemons. And you've got Crawford grinning a shit-eating grin at his own genius because people who love D&D enough to fill out surveys about the new edition love D&D, and it's because of his brilliant design. Meanwhile, I'm feeling like I've lost my way, as the angry GM, leave my personal life out of this, and I'm struggling to find my footing with my home games, including a new one starting in January to replace the one I broke last month that I have no effing clue what to do with. The word ennui barely covers this shit, huh? Even this long, rambling introduction is depressing me. But that shit's just shit, and shit's always happening. Being human is about learning to live through the shit. And the key to living through all the shit is knowing why it's worth living through all the shit. Knowing why. And to veer sharply away from life advice and keep this firmly rooted in pretend elf games, what's really at the heart of this is why it's all worth it. Why do I even do this gaming shit? Why master games? Why do GMs run games? Why do you run games? Why do I run games? And why do I keep banging my head against the wall teaching people who don't want to be taught how to run games better, or at least less worse? Context time, but not personal context. I got all that shit out in the long rambling introduction. This is the specific context that leads right into the question posed above, and another different question that lies at the heart of the above one. The problem is, I can't figure out how to present this context without just listing a bunch of disjointed, seemingly unrelated things and then tying them together. Sorry, this intro's a mess. Context thing one, MDA design. A long, long time ago, I wrote a series of articles I won't link for reasons I ain't going into about the MDA model of game design. The MDA model was a legitimate academic model of formalized iterative game design that, never mind, that's boring. You can read the original MDA paper yourself if you want to, and I think it's worth reading. The not boring part is like this. As part of formalizing iterative game design, the authors of the paper listed 8 aesthetics of play. 8 subjective, emotional experiences people derived from playing games. They were challenge, discovery, expression, fantasy, narrative, subjugation, sense pleasure, and fellowship. Why is fellowship the only one I listed out of alphabetical order? I'm going to fix that right now because that doesn't make sense. Oh, because fellowship is the most bullshitty of them. It's like the, no, the sense pleasure is the most bullshitty of them. Expression is the most overused. Expression has become an excuse for every friggin' thing, hasn't it? Oh, it makes the players expressive, and you gotta give them their expression. Anyway, proofreading. The not boring part is like this. As part of formalizing iterative game design, the authors of the paper listed 8 aesthetics of play. 8 subjective, emotional experiences people derived from playing games. They were challenge, discovery, expression, fantasy, fellowship, narrative, subjugation, and sense pleasure. And ever since I shared that shit with the RPG community, they've been misusing and misunderstanding everything MDA so effing badly, I wish I'd kept the whole thing a secret. I guess I am going to get into the reasons why I'm not linking the original article. Context thing two. D&D isn't for creators, and that ain't changing anytime soon. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote those 2 best and worst lists comparing the current edition of D&D to an edition published 20 years ago. And I concluded that little 2-part piece of clickbaity crap by saying D&D 5e's biggest failing was that it didn't invite me, a homebrewing creator GM, to create for it the same way previous editions had. And that it seemed to resent me for wanting to make my own stuff instead of executing games for the all-important players at the table. Which, by the way, call this thing 2.5, has been a growing sentiment in the online gaming community for the last half decade. That is, the GM's raison d'etre, I have no idea how to pronounce that, it's a French phrase. Well, the word raison is in there. So I have no idea how to say this, but it's raison d'etre. The GM's only job is to shut up and run the games the players demand. The GM's a dancing monkey and no more. And this, by the way, is my pick for the number one reason why everyone's trying to figure out why GMs don't want to run D&D anymore. Context thing 2.5, shut up and run the game, you dancing monkey. See above. Context thing 3. Just keep dancing. Anyone paying any attention to the news dribbling out of WotC about D-Box 1 shares my uneasy feeling that D-Box 1 is mainly about giving the players more toys and more options to be creatively and improbably awesome without any effort to help GMs build artful, engaging, deep gameplay experiences instead of superhero sandboxes. Context thing 4. An unanswered question that's actually super easy to answer. Since the dawn of time, 1974 in this context, tabletop role-playing gamers have argued about the relationship between the GM and the game. And the debate can be summed up in one clear, concise, simple question. A question with no correct answer. Until today. Until me. Is the player a GM? Nope, I read that wrong, I wrote it right. Is the GM a player? The answer is no. Don't be an idiot. What playing means. Before I explain categorically why the GM's not a player, which I'll follow with a heartwarming anecdote that will lift your spirits and invite you to share your own similarly heartwarming anecdote, before I explain why the GM is absolutely provably not a player, It's probably a good idea to make sure the question is worth answering. After all, I'd hate to waste my time and yours on pedantical semantical bullshit. The thing is, the psychology of games and gameplay and game design, they're really well developed at this point. And that's mainly because video games became a huge-ass bazillion-dollar industry, very much unlike tabletop role-playing games. Sorry to burst your bubble. Wherever there's a bazillion-dollar industry, there's a bunch of greedy people who want to get rich. And there's a bunch of smug people who want to study the industry and sell the results to the greedy people. Long story short, a lot of well-funded academic research went into why people play games and what separates... Whoops, I missed a word there. Long story short, a lot of well-funded academic research went into why people play games and what separates games from all the other things people do for fun. I ain't going into that shit here. Not in depth. You can do your own homework, or you can trust me when I say I've done it. The important point is there are lots of ways to understand why players choose the games they do and what they get from the games they play. One example is the MDA model of formalized iterative game design, which I wrote about long ago and mentioned above. The thing is, if you're a GM and you want to design engaging, appealing gameplay experiences of your own, it helps to understand, psychologically, why people play the games, why people play games, and what they get out of the experience. The more of that shit you can deliver, the better people will like your games. But... logically, if a GM is also a player, the GM can use the same formalized models of game design to analyze their own engagement with tabletop role-playing games, right? Thus, GMs can ensure their games also give them, the GMs themselves, engaging, satisfying gameplay experiences. Moreover, system designers, and hopefully Crawford is listening, but I know he's not, system designers can also use the formalized models of game design to design systems that appeal to GMs instead of treating GMs as vending machines that spit out gameplay experiences. But the problem is that if the GM's not actually a player, if the psychology behind all that game design social science crap just doesn't describe the way GMs experience games, using a formal game design framework to analyze the GM's engagement with the game is doomed to fail. And that is why it's important to figure out if the GM counts as a player. If they are, GMs can use game design tools to make themselves happy, and publishers can use them to make GMs happy. But if they aren't, things get more complicated. The part where things get more complicated. There's nothing about running games that suggests a GM can be modeled as a player. The psychological experience of running a game is inherently different from the experience of playing a game. And that's pretty clear just by looking at all the common academic definitions of games. To count as a game, and to therefore qualify in any formal game design framework, an activity must include certain things, like an explicit goal, a competitive element, and a constrained mechanical framework. If you're playing a game, you need a way to win, something to lose to, and a bunch of rules that tell you how to play. GMing just doesn't fit that bill. Unless, of course, you want GMing to fit that bill so badly that you bend all the definitions out of shape to make it work. You wouldn't do that, would you? Consider, for instance, the whole explicit goal thing, which, by the way, is something I've brought up a lot. When the players are working toward an in-game goal, they're playing D&D. Otherwise, they're dicking around in a sandbox. They're not playing a game, and the ones who want to play a game won't be happy for long. And while it's true D&D, the rules system, doesn't include explicit goals, each adventure does. Every adventure defines a way to win, and so do all the individual challenges along the way. And no, everyone having fun isn't an explicit gameplay goal. That's not what goal means, and you sound like a mouth-breathing moron every time you say that shit, so stop it! GMs don't have explicit gameplay goals. GMs don't have any conflict or competition. Nothing in the game is working against them as the GM pursues their non-existent goal. No, the players don't count. And no, again, the GM's explicit gameplay goal is not to show everyone a good time. That's also not a gameplay goal. Because that's not a gameplay goal. because that's not a gameplay goal. And some GMs run perfectly wonderful games without any desire to show anyone a good time. Seriously. The deep philosophical question, is the GM a player, is bullshit. And it shouldn't have endured as long as it did. GMs aren't playing games because GMs aren't doing any of the things people do when they're playing games. It's as simple as that. They're not pursuing goals, they're not overcoming challenges, and they're not constrained by the game's rules and systems. Hell, the GM gets to change, break, or invent the rules and systems. But that raises a question. If the GM isn't a player, what is he? Is there a useful way to understand how GMs engage with games so that GMs and system designers can build games that make GMs happy? I can answer that first question easily enough, but the second question requires me to put out my hand, palm down, wiggle it in the air, and say, eh, kinda. Hobby versus game. Games are just one specific kind of fun thing people do. Games are interactive activities with goals, challenges, and constraints. But there are lots of fun things people do. Lots of non-productive activities humans engage in for pleasure. We call those things hobbies. We call those things hobbies. Gaming is a hobby. So is painting miniatures. So is trap shooting and knitting and baking and collecting seashells and playing a musical instrument. Anything can be a hobby. And the line between, say, a hobby and a job can get fuzzy and blurry and vague. You can bake as a hobby, but you can also make your dough as a professional baker. You can start off as a baking hobbyist and turn it into a profession, making your hobby a job. Though, as anyone who has ever turned a hobby into a career, myself included, can tell you, that changes the psychology of things. A lot. It is not for the faint of heart or the weak of spirit. That is why that non-productive part of the definition of hobby is psychologically important. It has to do with how our brain responds to the activity, but that ain't important right now. What's important is that games and hobbies are different. You can game as a hobby, but you can also enjoy games without being a gaming hobbyist. And whereas games provide pretty specific and well-understood psychological payoffs, hobbies are complicated. Obviously, hobby knitters and hobby trap shooters have pretty different experiences from each other in their free time. But what's less obvious is that two hobby knitters can have experiences that are just as different from each other as from the trap shooter. Any two hobbyists can derive pleasure from completely different aspects of the hobby. In that respect, hobbies aren't unlike games, wherein some players are drawn to the fellowship aspects of games while others like the challenge aspect more. And it's even possible to see analogs between, say, the pleasure that comes from mastering a skill and the challenge-seeking behavior of a Soulsborne gamer, or the pleasure of getting lost trance-like in the repetitive motion of knitting and the subjugation of doing all the little chores that keep your Animal Crossing town running. But that's an illusion. The analogs aren't one-to-one, and eventually you find kinds of hobby pleasures that you can't translate into gaming engagements without breaking the model or the brains involved. Part of it's that hobbies are way less constrained than games. Games include goals, for example, and hobbies don't. Instead, it's down to each participant to derive their own mix of rewards, extrinsic or intrinsic, from the activity without a goal to provide context. Some knitters like the knitted things they end up with. They're after the extrinsic reward that scarves and blankets represent. Some knitters find the clack-clack of the needles and the muscle memory autopilot thing relaxing. That's an intrinsic reward. See how this works? And see also why it's better to understand GMs as hobbyists rather than players. Players have constrained experiences. Games are more constrained than hobbies, and tabletop role-playing games are more constrained than games by virtue of there being a specific kind of game. And so player engagements are easier to understand, analyze, and classify. It's important to note that players can be gaming hobbyists also, but it's not as important to understand their hobbyist motives because as players, only the narrower range of gameplay engagements matter. The player's brain knows why the player seeks those engagements. You just have to provide a game. It's also possible to be a gaming hobbyist without being a player or a GM. No, Cosplayers and miniature painters and stream watchers and readers are not players, and they cannot be analyzed as players. Yes, that is gatekeeping, and it is good, because gatekeeping leads both to better designed games for players and better designed non-game products for non-game playing hobbyists. They have different needs. So given that that GMs are hobbyists who aren't players and can't be understood as players, can you analyze GM motivations in that regard and design better experiences for GMs? Should you? Why this crap doesn't matter. Open any For Dummies book about a given hobby, and you'll find a short passage at the very start outlining the various rewards the hobby offers. A little grab bag of extrinsic and intrinsic rewards a person might expect from knitting or baking or trap shooting. The list of rewards isn't ever particularly detailed, and it's never exhaustive. It's just there to sell the hobby to someone who's on the fence, or turn away someone who's looking for the wrong rewards from the hobby. And once that passage is out of the way, that shit's never mentioned again. Neither the hobby nor its practitioners care why you're doing it. Even board games don't waste time explaining why games are fun. They assume you know why games are fun. That's why you bought the game. At best, some games will detail the particular kinds of gameplay experiences you can expect from that specific game, but that's just to help you decide if you're likely to enjoy playing that specific game. Once you open the box, the game's like, okay, here's the goals, here's what you're up against, and here are the rules. The point is, you're on your own to figure out what's rewarding about any given hobby. The best a hobby can do is provide a list of possible rewards other hobbyists have experienced. And that's because the goal of a hobby is to spend non-productive time on a pleasurable activity. Look, no one designed knitting to provide subjugation, skill mastery, manual dexterity, creation, and aesthetic pleasure. Someone noticed that knitting is kind of fun. Then other people noticed it too, each for their own reasons. And the companies selling knitting needles and knitting patterns and knitting instruction books and all that crap, they're not trying to fulfill motivations, they're selling tools. And frankly, that's a good way to understand marketing to GMs. I mean, if you listen to the average GM pissing and moaning about which systems are failing them and how, they mostly complain about not having the tools they want or need, or the lack of instruction, which is in itself a tool. Ironically, one useful tool GMs really need is a game design framework that helps them provide satisfying experiences for players. After all, that's what the GMing hobby is all about. Knitters turn yarn into scarves, trap shooters turn frisbees into shrapnel, and GMs turn blank paper into satisfying tabletop role-playing gameplay experiences. Knitters need needles, After all, that's what the GMing hobby is all about. Knitters turn yarn into scarves, trap shooters turn frisbees into shrapnel, and GMs turn blank paper into satisfying tabletop role-playing gameplay experiences. Knitters need needles, trap shooters need guns, and GMs need design frameworks. And just as knitters shouldn't stab themselves with their needles, and trap shooters shouldn't discharge their guns into their own faces, GMs should not turn their gameplay analysis tools on themselves. It'll all end in tears. To analyze or not to analyze. Hobbyists don't waste a lot of time analyzing what they enjoy. They just enjoy it. And that's good enough. I mean, if you enjoy doing what you do, just keep doing it. It's working. Really, the only time to ask yourself why the hell you're doing what you're doing is when you're not enjoying it anymore. Or when you're trying to pick a new hobby. This is why For Dummies books have those passages, but I digress. The point is, in general, it doesn't matter why your hobbies are fun, for you or for anyone else. What matters is that they are fun. But if you're trying to design tools for other hobbyists or teach other hobbyists how to hobby, or if you find yourself unhappy with a hobby that used to give you joy, it's useful to understand, at the very least, what attracted you to the hobby in the first place and why you kept coming back to it. As a GM, you're far better off understanding the aesthetics of play and how to design good gameplay experiences for players, since really your hobby is providing good gameplay experiences for players, than you are trying to understand why you get any pleasure from that shit. But there are times when some self-reflection is good for you. Thus, in the spirit of the new year, I invite each and every one of you, especially those of you feeling uncertain, unsettled, or anxious about your gaming life, to think about why you run games, not play. You players can sit this one out. You're easy to classify. GMs aren't. Reflect on your GMing hobby. Why did you start and why did you keep at it? And post your reasons below. Meanwhile, I'm going to end this by sharing my own reflection, which means I can write off some therapy as a business expense. Thanks. And now, that heartwarming anecdote and personal reflection. First, be warned. This is all personal reflection and stream of consciousness crap. It goes where it goes. Second, be warned. I'm old. I got into gaming 35 years ago. That was back in 1988. I was 10 years old. Thus, it's hard for me to remember specific gaming experiences, or even how and when certain things happened. But there are a very few vivid flashes in the chaotic montage that reveal precisely why I love running games. My clearest memory is drawing dungeons on graph paper in math class. That, right there, sums up half the reason I'm a GM. I started with the Frank Mentzer version of Basic Dungeons & Dragons, which I bought at my local B. Dalton bookstore. What made Mentzer's take on Basic D&D different from the previous Holmes and Moldvay versions was the very detailed dungeon building instructions. Hell, half the DMG was a tutorial that walked you through running, stocking, and then mapping a three-level dungeon experience. And I got hooked. At heart, I'm a game maker. Well, a scenario designer. A level editor. And I always have been. Before I discovered D&D, I spent hours fiddling with Excitebike's track editor and the level maker in Wrecking Crew on my Nintendo Entertainment System. That was back before most of you were even zygotes. When Super Mario Bros. 3 came out in 1991, my best friend James and I spent our lunch breaks at school drawing Super Mario levels on graph paper. Yes, 30 years ago, I played Super Mario Maker as a pen and pencil game with my best friend. And to this day, I'll play any game that has a build-your-own-level component, at least for a little while. But that's not all there is to me, because I'm also an entertainer. And that combined with my love for games and game-making in a pretty unique way. And that gelled with my love for games and game making in a pretty unique way. As far back as I can remember, that sounds like the start of a Goodfeathers episode from Animaniacs, right? Which was, oh shit, what was that a parody of? Was that Godfather 2 that started with, as far back as I can recall? Anyway, as far back as I can remember, I always took it as my solemn duty to make sure my friends and I had a game to play. Babysitting my cousin back in the day, I invented hand-drawn point-and-click adventure games on the fly on a chalkboard. With a flashlight and a Casio keyboard to make alarm noises, I challenged my sisters and cousins to find hidden objects in a cluttered playroom while evading a security camera's watchful eye. In the pool, I took on the role of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle boss characters, using a variety of pool toys as parts of highly patternized attacks, and challenged my friends to get through the gauntlet. And because I grew up in the age of just be home before the streetlights come on, I led my friends on merry live-action adventures around our neighborhood. Our bikes were horses, and the schoolyards, parks, wooded lots, forbidden construction sites, and abandoned houses provided an endless array of places for my friends to seek the clues and treasures I'd hidden the day before, following the map I'd drawn. And I followed them around like a dungeon master, occasionally playing NPCs and monsters. Even now, I can picture these game moments pretty vividly, like the oars from my inflatable pool boat which served as the missiles fired from Metalhead's hidden internal batteries. And I'm surprised to realize that, early on, I had a pretty fundamental intuitive grasp of how games go together. Huh. Go a little angry. GMing was everything I wanted in one hobby. I got to sit down with graph paper and a level-building toolkit and create my own game levels, and then I got to entertain the people I loved with those creations. Not that 10-year-old me or even 25-year-old me saw it like that. It was just fun. My understanding of games and stories evolved. With the arrival of the Super Nintendo, I became entranced by adventure games like The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past and RPGs like Final Fantasy II. Whoops, need to... need a space in there. We need space in the right spot. And RPGs like Final Fantasy II, the latter especially hit me hard. It resonated, and it showed me what a TTRPG could really be about. And yes, Final Fantasy IV was and remains superior to Final Fantasy VI in every way. But that's a story for another time. And side note, I say that as someone who is playing through Final Fantasy VI for the first time in many, many years again right now. So anyway. So, my games evolved from dungeon crawls and isolated adventures to grand sweeping epics across huge worlds, and my ability to bring worlds and characters to life improved with every campaign. And I invited my players to fully enter the world and to develop their own characters. Through play, of course. Always through play. What's interesting, though, and I only see this in hindsight now, what's interesting is that apart from some minor tweaks and the occasional custom class or race, like my awesome Moogle Dancer that another GM was foolish enough to let me play, what's interesting, yes, I know Moogle Slam Dancing came from Final Fantasy VI, not Final Fantasy IV, but IV is still the better game. What's interesting is that I never really hacked the game much. I was pretty content to build with the tools I had. And I could do amazing things with those tools, especially once I got them to the table and applied my improvisational sense of gameplay, narrative, and table performance. Honestly, it wasn't until this whole angry GM thing, and specifically when I built that boss monster thing for D&D 4E based on God of War 3, that I started seriously hacking anything. For all I keep trying to hack complex systems and rules into my own games, I don't get much pleasure from it. Understanding the rules and tools and systems so I can use them well, that I like, and it's really useful. But hacking shit really wears me down. And I'm coming to realize something important about the games I'm trying to run and games I've recently failed to run for fun as I write this, because I keep getting lost in the hacking weeds instead of just running good games. I guess this is where the difference between hobby and job comes in. I'm good at rules and systems, but it ain't what I do for fun. I mainly do that shit. Well, that's a whole different article, I think. For me, homebrewing is about the simple joy of putting the pieces together into something uniquely my own and then inviting my friends to experience it. And relying on my ability to perform, weave a story, and adjudicate a game on the fly to provide a rich, deep, moving experience. It's honestly the same joy I get from picking out the perfect Christmas present for someone, wrapping it carefully, writing out a heartfelt card, and then watching them open the gift and helping them put it together. In lots of ways, I'm still that kid drawing dungeons on graph paper and then turning them into amazing experiences for my friends. This explains why I can't run published adventures and why I don't really enjoy playing role-playing games. But I love playing video games of all kinds. And maybe it explains why my four fun games these days are such a struggle to enjoy. But I'm rambling. At the end of the day, I'm a nuts and bolts homebrewer entertainer. At least, if you made me stick a label on myself, that'd be the one I'd go with. I enjoy the solitary act of game creation, but only insofar as it's just assembling a baseline experience from Lego pieces, the skeleton of a game. And I enjoy the act of turning that skeleton into an engaging, rewarding, and moving experience that affects my players as deeply as my favorite video games and stories affected me. And the reason I'm here, on this site, doing this is to give each and every GM out there the chance to enjoy their own acts of creation and performance. And I'm also here because I'm an egomaniacal fucker who loves having an audience. Thank you for being my audience. And here's to a great gaming new year, whatever the F-wits at WotC do. Okay. And that is it, and I will see you, or I will hear from you all, or you will all hear me next year. That's the final, I really killed that ending. Anyway, and it ended so strong too.